Hi, this is James Devine with the Music Ed Podcast, and today I will be interviewing Wendy Reeves. We are going to be talking about making more music by managing administrative mayhem. I love that title, Wendy.
Strike up the band so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
Wendy, tell us a little bit about where you're teaching now and maybe a little bit about your career and how you ended up where you're at.
Thanks, James. I actually started playing the tuba when I was in sixth grade and knew at that point that I was going to teach band. I had lots of amazing experiences that were formative for me coming through, starting with the very beginnings of playing the tuba and playing in high school. I ended up going to Ohio State, where I played in all the concert ensembles with my tuba and then also was in the marching band. People from Ohio know that it's a big deal to dot the I on Script Ohio, and so I got to have that honor. And since then, I'm in my 26th year of teaching. I actually student taught in my own band room and then subbed a year and have this amazing job here in Dublin, Ohio for the last 26 years. I have 6th, 7th, and 8th grade band, and I assist with the high school marching band at Dublin Kaufman High School.
That is awesome, especially about the dotting the I. I've got it in my lesson plans for this next week, first week back, to show that to my beginning band students. So it'll be exciting to be able to tell them I know someone who dotted the I.
So
tell us a little.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, so anyways, what I'm talking about in this session, the managing administrative mayhem, is actually reducing and bringing under control the amount of time we as music educators spend in administrative concerns. We spend so much time on the administering of our music programs that it will often interfere with the reasons we got into music education. None of us ever went to music school because we wanted so badly to plan a field trip and order those buses and take care of logging in practice charts. We all went because someone somewhere made a huge impact on our life musically. And that was the core of our whole being. And so we as music educators, of course, want that to be what we do for our students. Unfortunately, the administrative concerns of a band or music program get in the way. And this session is designed to help participants understand ways to minimize that kind of administrative mess that we all have. When I'm talking with people there, I like to define what is an administrative concern. And for me, that is all of the things that keep me from addressing musical concerns, all of the non-musical mayhem. There's two things I hear when I talk about this. And one is that getting organized like this takes so much time. There's just people feel they don't have the time to set this in place. But I always apply what I call Wendy's rule of once, which is do it once and do it right. Now, I'm a farm kid. I grew up on a Christmas tree farm, and we had this rule, do it once and do it right. And if we didn't do it right the first time, we just had to keep doing that thing over and over until we did get it right. Well, you learn real quick that doing it once correctly saves you a mountain of time in the future. And repeating administrative tasks turns out to be such a huge time waster for us. We can minimize the amount of time we spend on administrative tasks. So if we think it out and do it once, that gives us the power to make a system that is easy for ourselves, or better yet, give the kids a system that is easy for them. And then we just have to tweak it as time passes. The other thing that people say is that they personally feel they don't have what it takes to implement and maintain an organizational structure like this. But when that is in your mind, consider how much time you're spending redoing and redoing and redoing. And you'll find that getting it in place once and tweaking it really does take care of things. And what we're trying to do is give ourselves the power to teach music, the power to spend less time at school, the power to leave our work at school, and the power to spend time at home hugging our spouses and our kids and our pets, and a power to pursue hobbies, which ultimately lead to better mental wellness, better teaching, and a happier life, which is this beautiful circle of improvement for us.
That is awesome. Those are some really, just that right there would almost be enough for the podcast. And do you find that many directors just, they have trouble just getting started with the organization?
Well, yes, because we are so busy in our classroom. The moment you sit down to try to do something, there's always a distraction. There's a staff meeting, or there's professional development, or there's a pile of instruments that need taken care of, you know, a kiddo that needs your help. And then we end up putting our need for organization at the bottom of that list. If we can get our organizational techniques under control, then they just become self-generating and you have more time to teach music and enjoy life.
Is there something that you have, I know this has been probably knowledge that you've accumulated over your entire career, but is there one thing that was kind of like the aha that kind of drove you down this path to learn these things?
Well, there really is. Years ago, I would say when my daughters were very young, I was, of course, teaching. I was the properties chair for the Ohio Music Educators Association Professional Conference. I was directing a musical. I had all these things that I was doing. And my husband snapped a picture of me sitting in an armchair with my laptop and one of the little girls on each side of me. They wanted so badly to be near me, but I was always working. So there's this picture of my girls just desperate to be with their mom, but me sitting in the armchair holding a laptop with one of the girls sitting on the arm of each chair. And that picture really struck me as something needing to change so that I could get my whole life in perspective. When I had my second daughter, it occurred to me that I was going to have to do something differently because I'm really do live my job. I love my job and it's a huge part of my life. And both of my daughters have come through my band program, but I knew that something had to change. So at that point I started revamping the way I do everything administratively. And then it's just kind of grown into the way that I do band in my band room. But I spend almost all of my time at school now just on musical things. Of course, I do have the things that are a distraction from musical things like every band director does, but my efficiency is very high. So I can enjoy the teaching more and have the administrative duties in their appropriate place.
It's so easy to get sucked into that in our field, to be pulled into so many different things, to become a workaholic. I'm in my second year doing middle school. And I was at a high school for 13 years before that. And before that, I taught 7 years at a private school and I had become burnt out there. And I thought I'm going to avoid doing that. But that same thing happened to me eventually at the high school. And so it's so easy to end up having more and more things. I really like one of your slides talks about the power for different things. And it says the power to teach music, the power to spend less time at school, the power to leave your work at school, the power to spend your time at home hugging your spouse and your kids and your pet, and the power to pursue hobbies. And I really love that because your materials talk about we still become a better teacher throughout all that, but we have the power to leave some of that stuff mm-hmm. behind.
Yes. As people listen to this podcast, I hope that they'll scan the QR code or go to the link, because in this session on my website, there's the things to get, there are the documents to get people started with the organizational techniques that are working for me. And they're in Word form, so it's just a matter of taking what I've developed for me and updating it for their own work. One of the things that I've worked long time on and find that is useful for me is a year-long plan for musical tasks, which keeps me on task for what I should be doing each week every year. We all know that when we're in a particular job, there are things that have to happen every single week of the year that are musical. For example, the first week of school, for me, there's no getting around the fact that eighth grade has to start their music for the eighth grade visit to the high school where we march with the high school band. There's no getting around that seventh grade needs to, again, for me, start with number one of the beginning book and review all the way through to make sure that we all remember things, and who knows who missed what day. If we can hit all those things before we start on new material, then we've got that review. And of course, with the beginners, there's so much stuff to do, even before we can get the instruments out. Then I know that as I go in, the fourth week of school is going to be the eighth grade at the football game. There's going to be buzzing and tonguing in the beginners, and the percussion classes are going to have to go from their mallet unit to their first snare unit. If I have that in front of me, there's this guide where I know exactly what's coming next. Putting it on paper makes such a difference, and being able to see your whole year planned out on one sheet of paper is so amazing. And of course, it is a fluid document. I had the most wonderful student teacher this year who had a degree in percussion performance. I definitely moved the drum set unit to fall from February because she had this great skill set that was better for my kids. But I do have that document that helps me keep always moving in the right direction. There's also in there a year-long plan for non-musical tasks, because the non-musical tasks are the things that will really sink you. So keeping that document moving, just knowing that in the first week of July, you'll always have the July 4th parade and squad leader selections have to be with that. It makes a big difference for me. The way that worksheet on my website is formatted is that my list of to do for myself is in one column, and there's a blank list for people to work on, kind of a worksheet, so they can take what I've developed for me and tweak it for their own program without starting over from scratch.
Do you keep that yearly task list? Do you keep that at hand somewhere, or do you find some other way to keep track of it?
I actually have a bulletin board that is above my desk. My desk faces a wall in the band room, and I have a bulletin board that is above my desk, and I keep my master list there, so they're always at hand. And I make a new one each year. I love crossing things off. Crossing things off makes me so happy. So I put them above my desk, and as I complete each week or complete each task, then the thing gets crossed off, and I have a new set of these to-dos for next year. And of course, they always get tweaked in between. There's things that I'm doing this year that I won't need to do next year because the district will change a policy or we'll make a different decision as a high school band staff. And then things change. So I update it a little each year, and it's very, very efficient.
I always love to hear how different people use that list like that. I have a very similar list that I use. I usually print it, and I have check boxes on it because I'm the same way. I like to check things off or cross things out. And so I actually print it out. I review it at the beginning of the year or sometimes at the end of the previous year as I'm preparing for the next year. And I've got things listed by month. So then what I do is, for me, what works is to print the list out at the beginning of the year, and I start checking a bunch of things off. And then I usually buy a dated planner for lesson plans, and the things that come up in the future, I put them in the date that I need to see them, because then I like to not see it when I don't need to be worried about it. So that's what works for me, and it sounds like for you, the bulletin board works. I've heard of people having index cards and calendars or phone reminders. So whatever people can find.
One of my favorite things that I've developed in the last couple years is a reverse lesson plan. I put a blank lesson plan layout for the whole year on one of my sliding boards. My whiteboards are a set of sliding boards, so there's a back board that is covered when I'm working. And if I raise that up, I write down every day at the end of the day what I've taught that day, so that next year when I'm looking at that day, I can go back and see exactly what I've taught every single day of this school year. And then I will write notes for myself, you know, oh, I think I better move this up 2 weeks, or this could go 2 weeks later, or don't forget something, to make it so that I have a record of what I've done. Because planning, my lesson plans are all in PowerPoint, which is a completely different session. I've transferred my lesson plans, every bit of them, from a paper document into PowerPoint slideshows for each class that I teach. And then I just drag and drop lessons throughout, or switch things in and out for my scores. But I found that writing down the lesson after I teach it is just as important for me as writing down the lesson I intend to do, because it's a document that says what uh-huh. I've done and how it went.
And that seems like it would be really good for evaluations with administrators
It is a good record of what I've been teaching.
I know a lot of times they also like to see like a reflection on a lesson. So do you do that as part of
no,
that
No, not
also?
Really. I just go ahead and I write down exactly what's been covered. You know, what in sixth grade, whatever etudes we covered that day, or in eighth grade, what we accomplished on whatever concert band music we're working on. But I could do on any of them, I could tell the administrator exactly how it went, just with that, you know, that reminder.
Uh-huh. So when we were chatting before we started recording the podcast, you were talking about how you like to do this in a 90-minute session, the material you're presenting today, and the attendees usually are working along with you. So I just wanted to throw in here that all of these materials are going to be linked to on the podcast page. So anyone who wants to go back later and look up some of those things, they can. But if we could maybe jump into one specific tip. As I'm looking through your material, you have a very cool looking plan that I'm going to implement for preventing lost paper and money. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about
that. One of my favorite things about my band room. And it's the first thing I did when I got my band job. I actually had the custodians bolt a locking mailbox to the band room wall, because I know myself well enough that I know that if a child hands me that field trip money, or hands me that permission form, or the solo and ensemble registration, those really, really important things that can lead to huge screw-ups in your teaching, those could end up anywhere. They could end up on my desk in my office. They could end up on my podium, buried in a score somewhere that I won't see for another year in a method book score. They could end up in the teacher's lounge. So I have a really strict policy with my students that they never put anything into my hand. They can't lay something on my desk. They are not allowed to lay it on my podium, and they can't put it in my hand. Everything they want to give me goes into the locking mailbox. And then at a quiet moment, I can unlock that mailbox. I can take out all of those important things and deal with them in an efficient manner. And it really does take a lot of worry off my mind as a band director, knowing that the kids are conditioned to put the important things in the mailbox and I don't have to deal with them until I've got the appropriate time and mindset to take care of those.
That is so great. And I've got on my calendar for tomorrow to go buy a mailbox because that's something that I struggle with. I usually put it in my pocket so I don't forget about it. But then what happens is that I end up at home sometimes with things that should be on my desk at work, and then I'm worried about forgetting it at home or losing it somewhere. And this sounds like a great plan to try. So I plan on implementing that one. Tell us a little bit about the self-service area in your room.
I find that if I can put responsibility onto the students, it takes their need for me to do administrative tasks for them off my plate. So first of all, my band room is color coded in every possible way. For example, row one is pink, and every chair has a number, and every kid knows what number they sit in and what number their stand is. So they actually tidy up themselves at the beginning and end of every rehearsal. It takes no time because they're going to sit down anyways. So that helps keep the band room in really good shape as far as being organized and preventing that somebody stole my chair situation. The self-service area is anything they might ask for that I might actually feel inclined to give them. So there's always pencils, there are always highlighters, there's always colored pencils. I have more Band-Aids than the clinic because you just never know when a kid's going to need a Band-Aid. But do they need to ask me for a Band-Aid? Do I need to give them a Band-Aid? Absolutely not. They can go right to that bin and get a Band-Aid. Or and it's kind of neat because it's anything they need that will get them through band or get them through the day. So if they show up for social studies and they're supposed to have half a dozen colored pencils, but something has gone wrong that morning, they don't have their colored pencils, they know that the band room is somewhere they can come and they can get those colored pencils and use them and put them back, which ultimately does help with recruiting and retention, right? Because anytime the band room is a safe place, a place that is like home, a place where you are helped unconditionally, is another reason to stay in the music program. So just being able to get a Band-Aid or a pencil or something you might need is a really great, powerful tool for my kiddos.
That sounds pretty awesome. And how long did it take you to, I'm looking at some pictures that you have of items in your room, and it looks very organized and very cool. I'm guessing that didn't happen overnight. Did you incorporate like one of these things at a time?
Well, I started with the self-service area, which is bins with the pencils and the valve oil and the cork grease and things like that. And that it really didn't take any time because we all would have those things in our band room. It's just a question of, can the kids get them themselves? And is it important to you as a director that the kids don't have to ask for valve oil or don't have to ask for cork grease or a pencil? And for me, it was a question of what is worth taking time for. For me, I'd rather they just get their own valve oil. If for some reason they don't have valve oil in their case, I'm still going to give it to them. I'm not going to say you can't have any. So for them to be able to get it themselves and put it back is a time-saving asset for me. Then as you know, as I recognize a need, for example, I wasn't happy with the way my percussion equipment was organized, my accessories. It wasn't working for me to not be able to see everything in a traditional percussion cabinet. So I actually put out a call to my band parents. A band parent came and installed some shelves for me to my specifications. And it was just a matter of moving the accessories into plastic bins and labeling them. It didn't take long. It didn't take more than an hour or so, but it's saved me so much time in the kids not being able to find what they need during rehearsal, because there's no question that this is the new brown tambourine and this is the one we're going to use. And these are all the other tambourines that we don't necessarily have to use, or this is the good triangle, as opposed to where you're going to hear my musical clock, or being able to find the kibasa and not knowing where it is. Is same with all the mallets and sticks. My students are supposed to all have their own mallet and stick bags, but am I going to tell them they can't play that day because they've forgotten them or because something's happened? No, I'm not. It's my choice not to. So that when they need to borrow something, they know exactly where the blue rubber mallets go or the red yarn mallets go. And for me, I can see all of that from my podium. My percussionist can't leave the room until I give a once-over scan to the back of the room to make sure things are in their right place. And it saves me a lot of time and stress and kind of ends that slow down of rehearsal where a student might not be able to find something or might need my attention when I need to be conducting.
So I have a question. Very, very great tips. I have a question about your color-coded stands. So do you have them so that they are like, does a specific stand go to a specific group of chairs all the time?
No,
or is it just a certain
specific
row?
Chair goes to a specific stand. Work? Every, like the in the front row, for me, the front row is pink this year. Row one chair one goes with row one stand one. And I'm really blessed that I have enough stands that every child can have their own stand. That's important to me because I don't like them sharing music because I like them to be writing on their music. I like them to be making notes on their music. I just prefer that everybody have their own things. So every chair does have its own stand and they are all labeled to match. Another cool thing, if you happen to have metal music stands, the students can use chalk, colored chalk, or white chalk to write their name on the stands. And it comes off so easily. It's just a question of Clorox wipe and it is erased. But I love it that my students can write their name on the stand. So eighth grade might be yellow chalk and it will say, you know, Jackie's stand or Joe's stand, because that really does make it so that they don't accidentally get things mixed up. There's never that someone took my stand, I don't have a stand, I don't have a chair, because everything is assigned to a particular kid.
When I first started my career, I taught middle school, and I remember just making a funny observation, and I decided not to intervene in it. I would see a student come in and notice that the stand they wanted wasn't where they wanted it. So they would grab a stand from somewhere else and put it at their chair as they got set up. Then someone else would come in and see that their spot was empty. And I saw like 10 or 12 stand interactions that took place that could have been one person. If the first person had gone mm-hmm. to the rack and gotten a stand, it would have eliminated the other 11 interactions. And I was just laughing inside to myself.
Yep.
Doing that, watching that. I want to remind our listeners that there's going to be a ton of material on the podcast page that they can peruse. We're not going to do a 90-minute session here. So I'd like to just delve into one more thing and then we can put links to everything else. I know for me, dealing with the instrument repairs is a big time crunch and something that can often be distracting. It seems like even when I taught high school, middle school, I was a Army band musician for a number of years, and even they did it. There's people who like to throw things into the sousaphone or into the tuba from across the room. And it didn't matter that the musicians were 35 years old. They still did that. So I don't think the age matters. But one of your slides really has caught my attention. And then I'll turn it over to you to maybe give us some tips about instrument repair. And the slide says, there are underpants in this sousaphone and Girl Scout cookies not even opened.
Well, that is a true story.
I haven't found Girl Scout cookies yet.
The sousaphone players took the instruments to the car wash so that they could wash them out with the high pressure hose. And sure enough, they washed out underpants and Girl Scout cookies. And they brought the cookies to me and said, they're not even open. Do you think we can eat them? And I said, no. No. Now, I'm a tuba player, so I've seen it all, but even those tuba players were not allowed to eat the Girl Scout cookies. With instrument repair, that is something that can really derail your rehearsal, because you, as a director, want your students playing. We're preconditioned to want our students to be playing, to be participating. We know that when they're playing and participating, our classroom management is better. However, we are responsible for teaching all of the students. And anytime we make an instrument repair in the middle of a rehearsal, we're pretty much derailing that rehearsal. So for me, I have a policy that I will take the time they're unpacking and do any instrument repair I can do in 30 seconds, which are springs, screws, mouthpieces, and getting the valves aligned, for example. But when it's time to start, it's time to start. I do feel it's important that I honor their concern, however. So I have a statement that I'll make to them. For example, like, I'm so sorry it's not working for you today. Be sure you see me at the end of class and I will do everything I can to help you. Because we don't want them to think it doesn't matter to us that they're struggling. It really matters. And it's so easy for them as children, as high schoolers, as middle schoolers to think, well, my band director doesn't care that I'm not playing. They are focused on themselves, you know, and they have a hard time seeing the needs of the group, where we as conductors and teachers know that the needs of the group are very important. So when I can't make a repair on the fly, I try to honor their concern and let them know I am concerned and I will do everything to help them. Then if they leave their instrument at the end of class, I can usually fix it. Or if I can't, I can figure out what's wrong and I make the effort to handwrite a note that I can staple to the handle, letting them know that I've looked at it, I've determined what is wrong if I can, and then the parent can take the instrument to the repair shop knowing that it's been looked at and I've done my best.
Uh-huh. I like the stapling part. I've used sticky notes, but sometimes those tend to come off a little bit. I teach at a Title I school, and almost every student uses a school-owned instrument. So I do something very similar where I tell them, leave it by my office, and I will look at it this afternoon, and then the next morning they can pick it up at the same spot next to my office. But I'm going to try stapling the note to it that I don't
recycled
have any,
paper is my best friend.
Sticky notes
anytime
that get lost.
I have, you know, every I can only speak for myself, but I would never give a middle schooler an original part. So I have infinite of paper that has music on one side and nothing on the other. If you just fold it lengthwise in half one time and write your note on the lengthwise and then staple it, it fits through almost all handles, even flutes.
Wow. Yeah, I'll definitely be using that one. In closing here, I would like you to just maybe take a minute or two and tell us about
I'm a relatively new member of Women Band Directors International. This is my fourth or fifth year as a part of that organization, and I'm the Ohio representative. I'm a member of ASBDA, American School Band Directors Association, as well, and of course, Ohio MEA and NAFNE. One thing I like about Women Band Directors International is that it's refreshing for me to sit down with a group of all women and compare notes. Although we certainly have come a long, long way in women band directing on being on an equal playing field with men band directors, it seems like there's something nice in a dialogue with all people of the same gender. And I'm sure men band directors find that as well, that when they have an opportunity to sit down and vent with each other, that they do maybe talk differently than they would in a mixed gender group. We have such great professional development in Women Band Directors International as well. It's just really neat. At our national convention last July, we had the most interesting conducting symposiums with Erica Neidinger and Courtney Snyder. It was just so wonderful to be able to stand up and conduct and play in a pickup ensemble, essentially, and practice our conducting with reflection by two women who are making a difference in the field. This is the 50th anniversary of Women Band Directors International, and we had the most wonderful roundtable at Midwest this year. Gladys Wright is our founding member. She's 94 and is a total inspiration. She taught her whole career in band, and she was a part of that roundtable. Hear the women on the round table talk to a full room at Midwest, knowing there's this much interest, was truly amazing.
That sounds really cool. And I bet she was a pioneer.
She was a pioneer
at that
in
age,
band
she probably
directing.
Retired
yes.
about 30 years
you know,
ago.
When women were not teaching band. And one of the neat things we've had for our 50th anniversary of Women Band Directors International is a spiral-bound book, an inch thick, of the history of women in band. And there is just so much amazing content in that book. For me to see the band directors who came before me, of course, in ASBDA, one of our wonderful, established, retired women band directors is Elaine Ostrander. And she has been such a mentor to me and such an inspiration to me through my whole career. Just to see the difference these women, these pioneer women in band directors, have made for me and other band directors of my generation is truly astounding.
That is very cool. I will include a link to that site also for the Women Band Directors International site in the show notes. And Wendy, thank you so much for your time on the podcast. Do you have some parting words of advice?
We are able to put these techniques into practice. And if people who are listening to the podcast do go to my website, they can flip through the entire slideshow that goes with this clinic. It's in two parts. And ultimately, as we put these things into place, we can take a moment to just think about what we are doing as band directors and what we are doing as people. And think about what what used to spark joy for us before we got bogged down in the teaching. What might spark joy now? What I found for myself is that I really missed singing. I started out as a double major in voice and tuba, and ultimately became just majored in tuba, but I was missing singing. So at some point I decided, well, I'll join my church choir. And it was so great to be able to perform with my voice, which I had put aside for so many years while I focused on child raising and directing musicals and teaching band. But when I got back into that, I realized how much I'd been missing it. And then we can ask ourselves, what will we do with the time we gain by managing our administrative mayhem? Is it a question of taking a new class? I started taking aerial silks with my daughter for a while, where I wouldn't have had time to do that if I had been sitting at home doing administrative work. Do you enjoy cooking? Do you enjoy sewing or doing crafts? What can you do to make your personal life fulfilled and your band room life fulfilled by managing your administrative duties? There's a quote that I really love, and it's called, "At the end," it says, "At the end of your time here, the world will either be more or less kind, compassionate, generous, funny, creative, and loving because of your presence in it. And you alone get to choose." That's John Pavlovitz. He's a minister and motivational speaker. But when we put our organizational, our administrative concerns into focus and into their proper place, that opens us as teachers, as people, up to be those things, kind and compassionate and generous and creative and loving, because we have shed the stress of administrative mayhem.
Thank you so much for your time, Wendy. I really appreciate it.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band teacher.